From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in the number of dogs and cats on your street. Have you noticed anything different? We love our pets. They are family, after all. And yet, for the first time in years, the rate of American pet ownership has declined a bit. Here's how Forbes reports it. Quote, the Global Pet Expo, the American Pet Products Association, worked together to release a summary of its annual report on pet ownership with responses from just under 10,000 consumers. The percentage of households with pets declined from 70% 3 years ago to 66%. 1 million fewer American households now has a pet compared to 3 years ago. It's shocking because the data is contrary to longstanding trends in pet ownership and the explosion of pets in daily life. End quote. That's from their report. Meanwhile, animal shelters all across our region are full. They're over capacity. Animal rescue groups are busier than ever. People are surrendering their pets at a higher rate than a decade ago. Why is this happening? What can be done about it? Joining us this hour to discuss it, let me welcome our guest. Brianne Kuhn is here, the president of Operation Freedom Ride. Bri, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us what Operation Freedom Ride is.
Operation Freedom Ride is a dog and cat rescue. We are completely foster-based, meaning we don't have a shelter or a permanent location. So we rely completely on fosters to take in a dog or a cat. We can't pull from a shelter or an owner surrender unless we have a foster available, open and willing to take in that dog or cat. And so we rely on a foster to give us background information, so then we're able to place them into their adoptive home.
Thank you for being here. Michael Avery is the volunteer and relationship coordinator for GRASP. That's Greece Residents Assisting Stray Pets. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
Tell me a little bit about what GRASP does.
GRASP was founded in 1996 out in Greece to fill the void between animals that were brought in by animal control who were otherwise wonderful pets but were unclaimed and would be euthanized out of routine. And we take them in and we give them a second chance. Since 1996, or actually just this year, we've placed 312 cats, 88 dogs, 3,000 since 2018, and countless thousands more since we started in 1996.
Incredible. Incredible. So let me ask both of you. I'll start with Brianne Kuhn from Operation Freedom Ride. Would you say that the work that you're doing has gotten busier, has gotten more stressful? What's going on?
We're all feeling the stress level. It's definitely busy. Every shelter is asking for help. They're begging. They're full. They're euthanizing. Like he said, animal control is in each town and city. They're full. And we can't do anything without fosters. And if those dogs aren't being adopted out of the foster homes, we're kind of stuck. We're not able to help the next one that needs to come in. So in order for us to keep going, all rescues, we need more fosters, more adoptions. We need people to spay and neuter, stop breeding, stop buying from pet stores, stop buying from puppy mills. So when you adopt a dog from us, you're getting a fully vetted dog at a cheaper cost. Our adoption fees are right around $400. And if you get a spay or a neuter from a vet right now, those prices have gone up and they're in the $600 range. So you're saving a life, adapting, and you're also making out.
Okay. Michael, how would you describe what things have been like for GRASP?
Well, it's interesting. We were discussing this earlier today, and just a few years ago, when we would place an animal for adoption, we would get 50 applications in one day, and we'd have people fighting over who got the animal. And now we put out an advertisement for a really wonderful dog, so a dog that would be very desirable for any home, and we might get 3 applications. So to your earlier point, asking about what is the nature of what's going on, Operation Freedom Ride, I believe they started by bringing a lot of animals from the South, mm-hmm. where it was oversaturated. There wasn't enough adopters for dogs, so they would bring them up here where we're very willing to adopt. I fear that maybe we've reached a saturation point in the North as well.
That's interesting. So, and that would be make everyone's work more difficult, wouldn't it?
It's much more difficult. It's so much harder to get a dog adopted. And like Brianne said, GRASP is also 100% foster-based. We're 100% volunteer. We don't have a shelter, so our dogs are in people's homes on their couches, and our cats as well. And we can only save as many animals as we have foster homes for. Our foster homes are full, and we have fewer applications for adoptions all the time.
I did meet a dog who came up from, I think, Tennessee. Is that right? Tennessee. I met this beautiful dog. He had a little bit of an accent. He got used to Rochester weather, and he's actually lost the accent. He sounds exactly like a Rochester dog now. now, it's really great work that's going on. I want to ask both of you about this, a little bit of this trend. And I don't want to sound like this, it's the biggest, this huge alarm, because still roughly in terms of surveys, we find that roughly 2/3 of American households have a pet now. And a generation or two ago, that was in the 50%, 50 to 55%. So it was going up, up, up incrementally. It got to 70% 3 years ago. Now it's pulled back a little. And my first instinct was, well, you know, inflation, economy, maybe that's part of it. Maybe this is a natural point. Maybe this is where it's going to have an equilibrium, roughly 2/3 of American households. Maybe that's where it will level out. But here's the weird thing. I want to read some data to you that was surprising to me. And it's about how much we are spending on pets. So fewer American households have pets, usually a dog or a cat, not always. Fewer American households have pets, but we are spending more per pet, and not just because of inflation. This is, again, from Forbes reporting, quote, in the face of households declining owning pets, the dollars spent on pets were up almost 11% from 2021 to 2023. According to the pet industry spending, a spending watchdog, spending in the pet industry reached $136.8 billion in 2022 and is now larger than the amount of money spent on domestic home building and on domestic airlines and on beauty and personal care. The humanization of pets, treating pets like children or human companions, is still driving spending. The CEO of Canineware, a doggy apparel company for major brands, said consumers now like to outfit their pets with the same brands that people wear, Tommy Bahama, Badgley Mischka, and more, end quote. And a lot of this is pushed by ads and social media. So sometimes people get, I've seen anti-depression necklaces for dogs. I mean, like, you see everything, and people are spending. So they have fewer pets overall, but they're spending more on them. Maybe that's a natural thing to do. Maybe we're getting conned a little. I don't know. Bree, what do you think here?
I'm not one to dress up my dogs or to buy matching outfits. You know, there could be 5 or 6 dogs in my house at a time. They're all vetted, cared for, fed. They do sleep with us or snuggle us on the couch or anything like that, you know. So maybe if some of those people would spend a little less on clothes and that, adopt another dog, you know, help out
Save
that way.
Save a little
way.
Room in the budget for one more pet?
Yes. Yeah. Or a cat.
Yeah, that's kind of where my thinking was there. What do you think there, Michael?
Well, I wonder about the veterinary spending. Because I know from our end, our veterinary costs are going through the roof. In order to save all these animals, last year we spent about $150,000 in veterinary bills alone. And that's with a lot of discounts that we get from, generous discounts from the vets. And when we posted that we were going to be on the show today, immediately on our Facebook page, people reached out and said one of the roadblocks for them getting another animal is the cost of veterinary care. And in Rochester in particular, the concern about the lack of veterinary care.
That's what we see too. Mm.
And that lack of veterinary care is something that we've covered quite a bit on this program. WXXI News has covered. It always lights up our feedback. People are very worried about that. How far do I have to drive in case of a crisis? Do we have emergency care? Do we have, you know, our vets overloaded? It's a really hard, in an ideal situation, how many more emergency services, how many more vets do we need right now, Bree?
I mean, you could bring in 20 other vets to this area and they would
be busy tomorrow.
Full, very busy. Yeah. And it is. I mean, we were talking about it earlier. Michael and I discussed a lot of our numbers. Our vet bills were, it was just shy of $200,000 last year. And like he said, we have some amazing vets that work with us, and they do give us a very generous discount. And without that, I mean, so we, you know, call them our vet partners. That's who we work with. They're wonderful to us. But if we had a few more, it would be a lot easier for everybody. And I think we're seeing so many unaltered dogs right now. You know, some shelters don't have a vet, and they're not spaying and neutering these dogs, and they're adopting them out, and it's not fixing the problem. And the problem is overpopulation. These dogs are having unwanted puppies, and they're being tossed.
What do you think, Michael?
The closure of that veterinary center and surgery center that was across from MCC was a huge loss to the community. It was a huge loss to the rescue community and the community at large. There's been so many wonderful urgent cares that have popped up around town. They're not surgery centers. They can't handle big things. A lot of times they will stabilize an animal and then they'll send us to either Ithaca or to Buffalo for the rest of the care. And emergencies, I don't know about you, but emergencies never happen during business hours. They always happen right after business hours, and we have to go to Buffalo anyway, which significantly increases the cost of care to the animals. It's so much more expensive for us to go out to Buffalo than it was to keep the animals here in Rochester.
Listeners, I've got a couple of emails, which I'll start with, but I want to hear from you, listeners. Do you own a dog and never used to? Do you own two? Have you essentially reduced pet ownership in your household or eliminated it? You know, have you changed your thinking about owning pets? I'm very curious to know what you're doing and how you've been impacted by some of these issues that our guests are talking about, whether it is veterinary care, emergency care options, just overall cost. I would love to hear from you. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@wxxi.org. Patrick writes to say, the cost of a sick pet becomes a barrier. Let's also acknowledge an aging population in the United States that is less able to care for them, and we need our younger people to be making enough money to be able to care for them. So that's kind of his overall diagnosis. I think there's a lot there. He also says, what's the recommendation on pet fostering if you have a three-year-old? I love the idea, but it makes me queasy thinking about what could happen if I wasn't looking. So he's got a three-year-old. He's thinking about pet fostering. What would you say, Bree?
So you can always start out with a puppy. We get in plenty of puppies. We're going to pick up 9 after this, right, Michael?
Nine puppies?
We can always match something. You know, you can start off small, young, maybe someone who's already been in a foster home. We know is good with kids or that. You can do a foster to adapt. We were talking about how popular that's become. Anything like that. But there is a way we can make sure it's okay with your child, and also setting boundaries for your child too. You know, you can't just let your child jump on the dog, hang on the dog, you know, put some gates up and things like that. Slowly, you know, introduce them. Decompression is important, you know. But yeah, my suggestion would be start with a younger puppy. They're always in need of fosters too.
Before I turn to your colleague, let me just follow up on a couple points here. Did you say you're going to see 9 puppies today?
We are going to the shelter after this to grab out 9 puppies.
Does it not melt your heart? I mean, like, how do you... Some of these animals are not living very long, like you said, and it's awful.
Because everybody needs to be spayed and neutered so we can get ahead of this.
I know. Oh, boy. I don't think I'd be able to go pick up 9 puppies and be like, well, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, be like, well, I guess I have 9 dogs now.
9 puppies will make you feel really good.
Yeah, and probably a little overwhelmed within about 10 minutes. Yeah, it would be fun for a little while. No, I mean, I love where Patrick's heart is here, though. I mean, and it's a very fair question, thinking about what's the right circumstance for our household, for our family. Those are good questions.
Yes.
Anything you want to add there, Michael?
No, it's an excellent question. And a lot of people will let the question stop them from reaching out and investigating whether fostering is right for them. And I encourage you to reach out and talk to us. Engage in dialogue. Let's talk about what your concerns are, because we desperately need more fosters.
Absolutely.
We can only save as many animals as we have fosters for. And I don't know any of our rescue groups that have enough fosters. We all need more.
What about the idea? I mean, Patrick points out we do have people living longer. You know, although post-COVID, our age expectancy went down a little bit. It's on the way back up. And, you know, that I'm thinking about people in my own family who, as they've gotten older, they've thought, you know what, I think I need a cat. I think I might need two. And I might need that companionship, particularly when people lose a spouse or something. That does happen. And Patrick is pointing out maybe they get less able to care for them as we get older. But I actually think cats are pretty low maintenance. I think maybe if you feel like you've got a limited capacity to care, I would vote cat over. I don't know how you feel about that. Cat's a little less maintenance, yeah?
I would say.
A cat is lower maintenance. And we do a senior for senior program too. So recently we've placed a lot of smaller, older dogs with some older single companions too, like that too. And, you know, any cat is, you could put some food and some litter out and, you know, they're pretty low maintenance.
Pretty self-sufficient, Michael. What do you think?
And this is one of the benefits to adopting from a rescue instead of going to a pet store. I have so much regard for people who are rescue adopters. It's a special breed of people because it is so much easier to go to a pet store, slap some money down on the counter, and walk out with an animal, but you actually don't know the temperament of the animal that you're getting. When you go through a rescue like either of ours, they've been in foster homes. Like in my case, I own a hair salon, and each one of my fosters comes to the hair salon with me. It's part of the experience, Michael Avery and Company on South Avenue near Cheesy Eddie's. It's part of the experience that we have foster dogs in the salon, and we get to see how they interact with people. Do they like men? Do they like women? Do they like the commotion? Are they great with children? We had a foster, I fostered not too long ago, a dog that absolutely loved children. We had, it was back to school time. We had a bunch of haircuts come in for kids going back to school. And there was six kids on the carpet and this dog was jumping all over these kids and having such a good time. And I knew she needed to be placed in a home with kids. So when we got an application in with a family that had four kids who were going to be homeschooled, I said, this has got to be the right one for them. So the point is, we can place an animal. So if you feel like maybe you're slowing down, we can place you with an animal that's at your speed, and we already know that. It's not going to be a guessing game.
Okay, great advantages here. Michael, how do people get in touch with your group, by the way?
Our Facebook page is the best way, in my opinion, GRASP. We're on Facebook, and we have the most up-to-date information on which cats and which dogs we have available at any given time, as well as you can ask a question underneath their pictures. People will answer you. You can read what other people have asked, and you can really get a feel for the animal's personality and temperament.
Okay. And how about getting in touch with you, Bree?
Yes. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, Operation Freedom Ride, and our website is at operationfreedomride.com. You can find the foster application, the adoption application for cats and for dogs. You see the available pets. And then you can always email to operationfreedomride.com Gmail.
What do you both need most right now? What do you need most, Bree?
Fosters and adopters.
Fosters and adopters.
Fosters and adopters.
That's it.
I mean, we need money. I got to pay those medical bills. So we need money as well. But yes, fosters and adopters, we can only save as many as we can foster and people who are willing to adopt.
How long do people typically foster an individual animal for?
It's definitely different, depends on them. If there is a medical issue, you may need to be held back a little while. Our minimum is 2 weeks. And like Michael was saying, we keep them in for 2 weeks if they need a little bit longer, just so we know the best possible home for them. You know, we want to set the dog up for success and we want, you know, the adopter to be happy and, you know, it to be a good match.
And we've said it's gotten longer because we used to get, just a few years ago, we would get 50 applications for one animal, and now we're lucky if we get three. So an animal could be with us for just a few days. I just fostered this 8-pound Havanese who was sent from heaven, and we didn't think we'd have her through the weekend. And I ended up having her for a few weeks because it was hard to find the right placement for her because we just didn't get the applications in.
I did pull up some of our numbers if you do want to hear them.
Yeah.
So for the 23 year, the number of dog adoption applications we received was 775. And then this year we've seen 640. And then for cats, last year was 200, this year is 162. So those are just the adoption applications that applied.
Okay. So little declines there.
And our foster applications for dog is down by almost 30. And then actually cat foster applications stayed right about the same.
You know, somebody smarter than me had a great quote about dogs. I wish I could find it. I feel very lucky because we happen to have the world. I mean, like of all the dogs, I can't believe we got the best one. But we got the best one. So sorry, everybody. There's a lot of great dogs out there. Happen to have the best one. Somebody said that if you do not own a dog, you are turning down thousands of years of evolutionary and biological change that is basically geared to create more happiness in your life. Mm. Like you're just turning down one of the great evolutionary advantages that we have to create joy in our lives.
If you don't own a dog, you've never been really loved.
Nobody is excited, you know, to see you when you walk through that door
so
as your dog
so
will
true.
Be.
Goodness gracious, that's very true. Okay, so let me work through more of your feedback here. Robert says, just a thought that occurred to me while listening about pet spending increases while total ownership has gone down. I think there could be a correlation to the trend that younger couples are having fewer human babies and are now doting upon their fur babies instead. This may explain why there are more human designer companies getting into pet accessories. It's from Robert. It's an interesting theory. It is true that the birth rate in this country is significantly down, but again, we're owning fewer pets. Maybe Robert's theory is couples are waiting longer to have kids or not have kids at all. They get a dog or a cat, but they don't get two or three, and they spend a bunch on their one pet. Maybe so. There could be something there, I guess. Possible.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think the article said that the total number of animals had decreased. It was the number of households.
Households.
And I do have to wonder, given the amazing amount of household churn that there's been in the last few years with the skyrocketing prices, it's really unaffordable for a single person to be alone in a house anymore. People are cohabitating. People with animals might be moving into the same household. But at the same time, with the household churn that's happening among landlords, you might get a new landlord that comes in that says, I don't allow pets. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's happening quite a bit. And people are struggling to adopt because their landlord won't let them. I'm also a longtime landlord, and I've always been welcoming to pets. In fact, during my interview process, I would always ask people, do you have a pet? And if you don't, one will be assigned to you when you move in. And they have restrictions on some of the animals, like maybe they don't allow them over 50 pounds. But I'll tell you, the best dog that I've ever had in one of my rental properties was a 100-pound Bernese Mountain Dog. What a lovely dog who was so easy on the property and wonderful to be around.
Mm. Let me keep working through your feedback, listeners. David writes to say, writing from Vancouver, Canada, he says, by the way, listening on the WXXI mobile app, which everyone should have on their smart device. He says, for me, the cost of emergency veterinary care is problematic. He said, my beautiful friend Edgar's face swelled up suddenly and severely yesterday, coincidentally. He sends a picture of Edgar the cat, a beautiful white cat, very well fed. And he says, my vet couldn't see him, so I had to take him to an emergency vet clinic. For what turned out to be an abscess of unclear origin, the bill came to over $1,200. Mm. My own vet tells me today it would have been about $450 there. Edgar will be going there for follow-up care, of course. David, I'm glad Edgar got the care. He looks great. Hope that he's doing great. That's tough, though. I mean, I have talked to friends where they've had situations where, you know, an aging dog has a surgery that could be $2,000, and you're going like, I want to do it. I don't know. Like, it's really hard. It's so hard because you want what's best for the animal. You have to make it work for your family and budget. It's terrible to when you have to be confronted with those choices. David, all the best to you. And Edgar, thank you for sending the picture. Edgar looks great. Everyone needs an Edgar in their life. But that's probably the kind of story he's in Vancouver. We probably hear those kind of stories here, don't we?
I've experienced it in my own life. I had to take my own animal into the vet and they said, okay, we have an appointment a month from now. I'm like, well, I'm having an emergency situation now. You can't see me. I'm a patient here. And they sent me to urgent care and I'm sure it cost me much more expensive to go there. It's rough and it's a national problem. It's not just local. There's a shortage of veterinarians across the country.
Yeah. Anything you want to add there, Bree?
It's the same with us, especially if we're trying for a foster dog that they've never seen before to try to get them in. Usually the vet's like, well, I need to have already seen them. Are they a patient here? No. So then our options do become limited and the bill becomes bigger.
Peter writes to say, I'm pretty sure Operation Freedom Ride just helped a friend in emergency fostering and rehoming of an abandoned pit bull just yesterday. Says, as someone who has fostered and worked with organizations before, I just wanted to point out all the extra and wonderful stuff these folks do for all the animals in our area.
If we have a foster willing to take in a dog, we will not say no.
Amen. Same here. If when we have the fosters, we can bring them in.
Oh, boy. More fosters, more fosters, more fosters.
It really is what we need so much. And that dog was found outside. No home. Nobody came forward for days. The finders, you know, they kept him. They brought him inside. You know, thank God for wonderful people to bring him inside and hold him until, you know, they could get rid of a rescue. And we had a foster step up. So he'll be going to the vets, getting all the care he needs. And
Let me squeeze in one more email before we take our only break of the hour. Sheila writes to say, Evan, we have two dogs and a cat. We are about to spend close to $10,000 for MRIs, CT scans, and surgery for our 10-year-old dog who has a cancerous tumor. We are going to a veterinary surgeon in Syracuse because our vet said there are no vets in this area who can do the surgery. The advancements in medical care for humans has trickled over into animals, except there's no canine Medicare. We have a canine health savings account, and that's helping. But 20 years ago, a 10-year-old dog with cancer would not be having surgery. They would die. Thanks to the folks on your show who do so much good for our animals. That is from Sheila. I think Sheila's right. I mean, the advancements in possible care have improved tremendously. Now the question is just numbers. It's population. It's how many vets do we have? Who can do it? I'd have to think in the future that's a good line of work to go into. You know, I mean, we need more, don't we?
Yeah, you're guaranteed a job.
Yes, 100%.
Why don't we have one? How did this shortage come about? I'm very curious.
I mean, isn't this a different show?
Yeah, I guess so.
We've had since the baby boomers have been aging out, but also are thriving and creating a ban on the economy, we don't have enough people to fill the positions across every field.
Yeah, well, okay. We're in an age, in the age of AI, where everyone's worried that your jobs are going to be going away. This feels like... Tell your kids to get into this. There you go. A lot of opportunity here. We have to take our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back in just a moment. We've got a lot more of your feedback to share. We're going to welcome a third guest. We're talking in studio to Brianne Kuhn, president of Operation Freedom Ride, Michael Avery, who is a volunteer and relationship coordinator for GRASP, that's Greece Residents Assisting Stray Pets. Their organizations, as you are hearing, are doing such great work, but boy, is it tough. There's a lot to be done. They have a lot of need, and that's what we're talking about. We're sharing your experience via email and phone call, and we'll come right back on the other side of this, our only break. I'm Evan Dawson, Thursday on The Next Connections. A view from the solar industry on what will happen with clean energies depending on who wins the election, not just on the presidential level, in Congress. And a lot is at stake. We're going to get a little wonky in our first hour. In our second hour, an update from the Landmark Society on efforts to build careers in the trades. Talk with you Thursday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me welcome to the panel Carrie LeBounty, who is Operations Manager for Pet Pride of New York Incorporated, which runs the Pet Pride Cat Sanctuary and Adoption Center. Carrie's on the line with us now. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for making time. Tell people a little bit more about Pet Pride of New York and what it is that you do.
So Pet Pride is a no-kill cat sanctuary and adoption center in Victory, New York. We house about 80 cats at a time. It is a little different from other shelters that once they're comfortable enough and vetted, they roam free. So we do have kittens that are separate and then adults and seniors. So you get to see them in more a home setting where wherever you are in the building, a cat is there. So we adopt them out and take them in as we have space for the next cat.
Carrie, what has changed in the last few years in terms of the demand, the need, and the work that you're doing?
So I'd say that as we have 80 cats in the shelter, we're at capacity. We also have about 80 to 100 on our wait list waiting to come in. It's been a lot of what I see, a dip in vet services, spay and neuter resources. You know, we really need more foster homes to help us, you know, save the next animal. You know, I think all rescue organizations can say that that helps us help more. So I'd say that that is our biggest obstacle right now is our vet services and spay neuter.
Need fosters has been the message here. I mean, they all need money. Everyone needs money. But yeah. they need fosters. Carrie, how would people get in touch with Pet Pride of New York if they want to learn more about what you do?
So petprideny.org is our website. We have all the information on there, how you can volunteer, how you can become a foster. You can also call the shelter for information, 742-1630. But we have, you know, who we are, pictures of our adoption center, and all the information up on our website.
Three organizations represented on this program. Let me get back to your feedback here. Listeners, it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Connections@WXXI.org is the email address. We want to hear from you about pet ownership. Have you ever fostered? Have you thought about it? Has it been? I've never talked to somebody who's like, oh, it was a bad experience. Everybody's just like, no, it's just kind of sad because it's so hard to see pets go, but you know you're sending them to a better place.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of rewarding work there. Tim in Rochester on the phone next. Hello, Tim. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. Can you hear me?
I can. Yep.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask about something that maybe your guests know about. Twice now I've had to, in the process of being a caretaker to an elderly person who've had pets, usually cats, I couldn't find anybody that would want the cat and ended up having to, unfortunately, bring the cat to a vet for euthanasia. But in two times, the different vets said to me, when elderly people adopt a pet, family members ought to actually think about this because frequently the pet will outlive the elderly person. And I'm now dealing with it again because I have an aunt who has dementia and they just start to forget how to basically care for the pet, forget to feed it, forget to change litter and things like that, which throws everything into, you know, where they're living into chaos. In this situation, it's assisted living. So now I'm dealing with, you know, having to move her out of assisted living and the cats. And so I'm just wondering what your, I know it's counter to what the people are on your panel are talking about in terms of protecting the animal, but I just think there needs to be some additional thought about elderly people who may have some kind of illness or pending problem to adopt, because I wonder what will happen to the animal. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Tim, thank you for the phone call. Let me start with Carrie LeBounty from Pet Pride of New York, which runs the Pet Pride Cat Sanctuary and Adoption Center. What do you think, Carrie?
Yeah, so I really congratulate him for really taking care of these cats because it is hard to be caring for a human and then also have their animals. But we unfortunately take in a cat in that solution often. Either their family member isn't doing well or they have passed away and the pets are there. We do have a wait list, but we keep in contact and, you know, is someone caring for the cats while they're there until we can take them. So we do take cats like that. We are working on a program with a lifetime contract that you make a plan for your pet upon your passing so that, you know, Pet Pride would take in your pet. We also, if it is a Pet Pride animal, and I could probably speak for most organizations, that we always offer and want that cat to come back to us. It is in our contract that if something was to happen and they could no longer care for that animal, we want them to come back to us. But, you know, we would help, even if it wasn't a Pet Pride cat, we do help in situations like that.
Okay, let me ask our guest in studio, Michael Avery, what do you think here?
100%. One of the things that we do in our intake process is we have people fill out a whole bunch of questions, and some of them seem irrelevant and they seem intrusive to people. Like, what is your age and do you have a plan in case something were to happen to you? And the point of that is to get people to start thinking, because the intake questionnaire is the beginning of a dialogue, and we want people to be aware of what situations might come up and make a plan for that. And just like Carrie said with her organization, and I'm sure Brianne is going to echo this, if something was to happen, we want the animal back. We will welcome the animal back with open arms.
Mm. By the way, Michael, do people bristle at questions like that?
Oh, sure.
They do.
Oh, yeah.
And then you just explain, look, it's not meant to be too personal, but we are concerned about the full course of care for the animal.
Well, and it can be tricky in general because we've gotten to know animals and we know some of their special needs, whether they're good with certain types of people or if they need a fenced-in yard. Some don't, some do. And people will feel rejected if they're not chosen, as though there's something wrong with them. And they are wonderful pet parents, but maybe not for this particular animal. And I would encourage those people, don't give up. Keep your application in, and we're going to find a match for you. We're going to find that love connection that is going to be the companion for you for life.
Mm. You want to add to that, Bree?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same on our side. We will always take the pet back, dog or cat. It may take a few days for us to find, you know, to back to that same foster that had the dog or the cat or a new one, but we always do want the chance to take it back.
But better to have a plan, right?
It is. It's better, you know, they should ask their family and that. And we do ask how old you are and how old is the dog you're applying for, because maybe it's not a good match. You know, somebody who is in their 80s might not want an 8-week-old puppy, right? You know, so we try to help on both sides and take everything into consideration.
When I was in fifth grade, the best dog in the world, we actually got another one of those. I've been really lucky. I've actually had two world's best dogs. At different moments in my life. And Katie the Wonder Dog was a collie that my grandparents in Florida owned. They were moving into a place that would not allow dogs. And so Katie came up to live with us in Cleveland. And lucky us, she did turn out to be the best dog ever. Until now, which we have the best dog now. But I'm thinking about what David in Vancouver, he follows up with a point about where pets are welcome and where they are not. Mm. And so the reason we ended up with Katie when I was in fifth grade is because our grandparents broke their heart. They had to give her up. David writes to say, I was surprised when I moved from Ithaca to Kingston, Ontario. He says, with the actual best dog in the world. Now I'm offended. Okay. It says, back in late 1995. And David says, I was thinking I would have trouble finding a place that allowed dogs. Turned out I was wrong, because the law in Kingston, Ontario, required landlords to take pets. Hmm. A bit of extra rent was required, but I found a place very quickly, not surprisingly. David, that is very interesting. I'd be very curious to know 30 years later if that is still the law there. But certainly that can be a problem. That can be a challenge. It can be a barrier. And I don't know if our guests here feel like, yeah, we should open it up. Because I understand. I mean, I understand there are times why landlords would not want a pet. I also know how valuable pet ownership is to someone's life, makes people happier, makes people hopefully feel a little bit more connected to their communities. I don't know, Michael, do you think we should see a little bit more leeway, leniency there?
Well, I'm an American and I'm a capitalist, so I don't believe in telling people what they have to do. But as I said, I'm also a landlord, and I tell people that if they don't have a pet when they sign the lease, I'm going to assign one to them, because I'm all for pet ownership. And I honestly think more landlords should. Pets can be wonderful, and they don't do damage. It's the people that do the damage.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, pets can do some damage. Right?
Sure, but it's because they have irresponsible owners. It's not the animal.
Okay. Not the angels.
All right. Brie, would you agree with that?
Yes, and a lot of dogs now, you can get them emotional support dog through your doctor, and your landlord does have to accept them.
Oh, that's very interesting, too.
Yeah.
By the way, every dog is an emotional support
exactly.
dog.
Carrie,
do you want to add to that?
I would say one of the number one reasons is why we get calls for intakes is they're moving and yes. their new place will not allow pets. They, you know, and then it's day two. They're like, I'm moving tomorrow. I need help now. Yeah. So there is definitely a disconnect with landlords not allowing pets in these apartments. It's definitely been an ongoing issue, but lately I've been seeing it more and more.
Again, we have a landlord on the panel who says it's the people, not the pets, that cause the damage.
Amen.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll see. Lisa in Pittsford, next on the phone. Hello, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you, Evan?
Very good.
I want to thank you and your guests for taking care of animals in need. And I come from a human healthcare background. I'm a nurse. My husband's a physician. And I understand that there's a shortage of veterinary care in Rochester, probably nationwide, and it's extremely expensive. So my question is, have the veterinary societies or ever thought of providing health care to pets the way we provide it to humans? Like, for instance, have vet residents that work underneath an attending veterinarian so that they can provide more care and less expensive care? And I'm just surprised that our vet education system hasn't thought about that concept.
An interesting point. Bree, you want to start? What do you think?
That would be amazing, vet tech students and everything, if, vets were willing to have them in there, extra hands, extra vaccines, anything like that to lower our cost, and they would be learning and getting paid.
Just like medical residents.
Yeah. Michael, what do you think?
That question is above my pay grade.
Carrie, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, so I think that is an amazing idea. I love it, and I hope someday we can get there. But right now, we're at a point where we just have a vet shortage. COVID hit, a lot of vets that were thinking about retiring, all retired. Hospitals are accepting new patients. We're just scrounging for regular vet visits or, finding a vet to help us rescues, just, the high volume of spay neuters that we need. But hopefully we could get there someday. I think there are some new vet schools I heard that are opening up. I think we're trying to boost that education and get more vets in doing that. And I heard that they're starting like forgiveness loans, like they were for vet students as they were for college. So I think we're on that right track, and that's a great idea. I hope that more people talk about that and we can get that moving.
Lisa, anything more you want to add there?
I guess the other thing is I've heard Verona will adopt pets out without being neutered or spayed based on the fact that they don't have vets to do it, and it's very difficult to afford it. My question is, did they ever think or has any rescue ever thought of giving kind of like little certificate?
A voucher.
That will offer any vet. Yeah, a voucher. Any vet in the community who will provide neuter services, and that then the animal care organization will pay that vet. Because it makes me very nervous about sending animals out to communities that are not neutered or spayed.
Yeah, very good question. Lisa, thank you for the phone call. Carrie, did you want to add some thoughts there? It sounded like you want to jump in.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure, I can't speak for RES. I think they are handing out vouchers because they are without a vet right now. I know in the past, Pet Pride, before I started there, did something along those lines where if it was a kitten, they would put down a deposit. And then once they spayed or neutered, they got, their money back. But what we're finding is that we, as a rescue, we can find spay and neuter resources faster than a regular person. They calling, they're not accepting new patients, spay and neuter lists, even low income spay and neuter lists, they're waiting 6 months to spay and neuter their pets. So I think it's a good idea. I don't know if we're there yet for a voucher, but definitely RES is in that position where they don't have a choice, really.
A separate set of questions that may be related here. So Greg had a two-part question on fostering that maybe everyone can weigh in on. First of all, Greg's wondering if cats and dogs that end up getting fostered, are they typically spayed and neutered? Brain?
So yes and no. Sometimes they're spayed and neutered. We can get it right away. Or they go into your home and they're going to get spayed and neutered in there. But fostering costs you nothing. We supply the food, the treats, the bed, the crate, all the vetting, the rescue. And I know grass is the same. We supply everything. So fostering costs you nothing.
Okay. Michael, anything to add there?
Exactly. And this ties in with the entire premise of the show, that we've had to adapt to the changing scene on the ground. And it used to be that we would foster until all that medical stuff was done. And now, because it's taking so long because of the shortages, we've developed new programs, all of us, and we usually do foster to adopt, which removes those barriers. So if you're interested in adopting this animal, but it's going to be a while before we can get in to finalize all the vaccinations, all the spay and neutering, you can actually have them in your home. The rescue group pays for everything. And then once all that's done, it's just a formality to hand the keys over.
Okay. Carrie, anything you want to add?
Yeah. I mean, we've been using fosters because also we can't find spays and neuters, so they will hold them until we have a spot. You know, sometimes those fosters only have them a week or two just so we can find those resources to get them done. But mostly in my, you know, I'm only cats. They're not spayed or neutered. They're mostly kittens or moms that are nursing, so they're not spayed or neutered while they're in the foster home until they come back.
All right. I'll get Greg's second part, and then John in Rochester, I'll take your phone call. We're going to squeeze in as much as we can before the end of the hour. Greg's second part of the email, he wanted to know, he said he heard that pets that end up in foster care are typically in foster care because they've had behavioral issues. That is not, no. I mean, our guests in studio are going,
Absolutely not.
Emphatically no.
No.
So, no.
And let me just say, Greg, I appreciate the email, and it's good to clarify this, because there are stereotypes about pet fostering. There's stereotypes about, you know, the child foster system that we should be really careful about, because, it's just good to make sure that you understand. And with animals, if you think about it this way, Greg, think about the numbers issue. Our guests are telling you that shelters are full. There are wait lists for organizations like Pet Pride, and there are so many animals out there. So an animal that ends up in foster is just one of the many animals that needs care and needs a home and is a victim of a numbers game. It has nothing to do with their behavior, right?
Well, I myself was a foster kid. I was in 5 homes before I was adopted into my forever home at age 15. And a lot of people would say, oh, I don't really want to take that kid, damaged goods. You know, there's a reason. Well, the reason wasn't me. I was a good kid, and I've turned out pretty good in life, I think. Same with these animals. They're not the ones, and the animals that we're getting in are wonderful, lovely animals that are victim of circumstance, and they are going to find their forever home and live wonderful lives. I've had 7, adopted 7 that were all rescue dogs, and apologies, mine are all the best dogs in the world.
Brianne, what would you say to Greg?
So I'll give you some numbers, Greg.
Yeah.
We have 60 dogs in our foster care right now, and we do have 2 dogs out of the 60 on behavioral hold, and they're going to get some training. It's nothing crazy, nothing. We just want to get some extra training.
2 out of 60?
2 out of 60. Wow. So there's some numbers, right?
Incredible. And got to keep it tight. Carrie, thoughts for Greg?
Yeah, we don't have any behavior cat fosters. It's mostly just kittens that are too young to go up for adoption.
Simple as that. Yeah. Greg, thank you for the email. Let me squeeze in John in Rochester. One more phone call. Go ahead, John.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead.
Yep. I just, you know, I think one of the guests mentioned about getting emotional support letters. I want people, I feel like encouraging anyone to get an emotional support letter when it's already an abused issue, and knowing there are people who live in apartments and choose them based on pets not being allowed there, is important to note. And you know, the emotional support letter is abused already on airlines and in a lot of apartments. So I know it's kind of a joke, but I don't think that should be a way around people to get pets where they're not allowed to have pets.
John, I think that's fair. And, you know, when I riffed that all dogs are emotional support animals, that's just my way of saying dogs are great, cats are great. But I'm with you. I mean, there is a distinct category, and it's good to have documentation for that, especially if you've got neighbors in a rental situation or landlords or you're traveling. Yeah, I think good. Have documentation. That's great. Down to, oh my gosh, we're down to our last 45 seconds. Michael Avery, 20 seconds. You want to leave with listeners. What do you want to leave with them?
I want to say, please consider fostering. And if you're going to consider it, please consider it today. We, both our organizations, have animals waiting in the wings that we want to take out of shelters, but we do not have a place to put them. You could be the place that we put them.
Bree?
Foster and adapt. If you're on the fence about fostering, apply. You'll talk to one of us. We'll walk you through everything. We supply everything. Same with adapt. Maybe you're not ready to adapt today, but get on the list, get approved, talk to our coordinator. Somebody will help you, and we'll find your match, either if it's foster or adoption.
And Carrie?
Please visit us at Pet Pride. We also have a great fundraiser coming up called Kittens on the Catwalk, November 10th at 4:30. You can get tickets at Comedy at the Carlson.
Great event there, great services, and listeners, everything you heard, whether it's Pet Pride, Operation Freedom Ride, GRASP, we're going to, in our show notes, make sure that you are linked up to getting in touch with them on their various platforms online, or how to get in touch with them if you are interested, if you want to learn more, if you want to foster, if you want to go down this road. But I want to thank them for the work. Carrie LeBounty, thank you for making time for the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Brianne Kuhn from Operation Freedom Ride. Thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Bri. Michael Avery, Volunteer and Relationship Coordinator for GRASP. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to speak for all the animals out there. Thank you guys for what you do. Although we do have the best dog. Thanks for listening from the whole team at Connections. We will talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.